Hello and welcome to The Outer Frame. I'm your host, Jason Sellers, and on today's episode, we will be discussing Shazam! Or Captain Marvel 2, Dawn of Shazam, as well as trying to figure out what is and what should happen to the DCEU. But first, let me introduce the person who can yell Shazam better and mightier than anyone else on the planet of Earth, Donnie Nelson!
Shazam!
There we go.
That was a weaker one, I would just like to say for the record.
Yeah, but if you did a really good one, then nobody would be able to contain themselves.
I contain in what way? In that they want to murder me? And they will find me?
Yes. Or that they would want to marry you. And there would just be this flood of people trying to marry you.
Well, I'm sorry to say I'm taken, Jason. They're going to have to move on with their lives.
Well, that is a bummer, because I like my idea more. Just a bunch of people trying to... It's like that episode of Rick and Morty, you know, where Morty, that he gets that love potion on him, and then everybody's, like, in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
And then they all turn into Cronenbergs.
Come on, Morty. You Cronenberg this dimension. Now we need to go to another one. I can't do this every time. It's a good time.
When there's an area in Shazam where they are opening doors.
Oh, yes, yes.
And getting views of other dimensions. And one of the dimensions that they view involves alligators, which is not a spoiler. And when that happened, I turned to Caitlin and I said, "Just look at that, Morty. Look at it. Look, what are they doing, Morty?"
They only really do specifically like two doors, which I was kind of really disappointed by. Not that we should jump the gun about getting into the Shazam discussion, but the other door, I'll just say to the audience, no specific spoilers, but the other one is a Stephen King reference. One of my favorite Stephen King adaptations.
Yes. But don't spoil it. Everybody will be furious.
Well, everybody will just think it's it. And I assure you it's not it.
No.
No.
It's Carrie.
No, it's Carrie Pet Cemetery, obviously.
It's Carrie 2, The Rage.
Ugh. What about Firestarter? Okay, let's move on.
What about Sleepwalkers?
No! Stop!
There's
what about the Langoliers?
There's just a mother and son going at it.
Ugh, stop. Please, can we move on, Jason? I do not like this conversation anymore. Let's stop talking about Stephen King.
Okay. Well, speaking of Stephen King, what's the worst thing that you've seen recently?
Well, the worst thing I've seen recently was the first 5 minutes of The Dark Tower. No, I'm kidding. I did watch it, though, and it seems bad. I do want to watch more of it, though, because it seems like they're going... Like, I heard bad things about it, but they like, go bad. Like they go in hardcore on the bad. Like, Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey are, like, full sending in that movie. And I do want to watch it for that.
I got a free copy of it for my Vudu library, and I have been meaning to watch it just because I'm a huge fan of the books. And I'm kind of curious to see, you know, how they were going to cram these thousands of pages of books into three movies.
Right.
If you're
a fan of the books and like they hinted at what the movie was in relation to the books, which would explain why there's differences and it can still be connected.
Mm-hmm.
So like in that way, they kind of like wrote themselves out of having to cram all that stuff in. Even though, from what I heard, it kind of already does try to cram a bunch of stuff in.
Wait, okay, so is The Dark Tower the worst thing that you've seen recently?
No, but I love talking about movies I haven't seen.
All right.
Only speculation. No, the worst thing...
This has been Spec Chat with Donnie and Jason.
Oh, expect more of it. Just random Spec Chat. That's how we work here. Actually, the worst thing I saw this week... was a film I actually don't hate, which I just don't like watching things that I hate, Jason. I want to get at least some entertainment out of it. Was a movie called Waiting, which came out years ago. It stars Ryan Reynolds, pre-Deadpool. I think even pre-X-Men Origins, Wolverine as Wade Wilson in that one. But it is essentially like the spiritual successor. It was like the next generation's Clerks, but it was for a restaurant.
Yep. And it was terrible.
It is terrible, but I came home to it being on TV, and I couldn't stop watching it. I watched it all the way to the end. I don't know why. There's something juvenile in me that still appreciates, like, just horrible vulgarity and also just, like pure befuddled curiosity as to why anyone found Dane Cook funny.
Right? So I will say that I really like or enjoy most of the cast in that movie.
Yes.
Because from what I remember, they all seem like they're trying, like, really hard.
Oh, yeah.
And usually that's like 50% of a comedy for me, at least to be able to enjoy, is if like the cast is enjoying themselves, I'm down to at least give it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
I agree, though. I also do not find or get why people find Dane Cook funny. And I think that if you have the desire to watch Waiting, you should just watch Adventureland.
That's true. I feel like there's... I don't know. I feel like if you want to be trashy about it, watch Waiting. If you want to have a little bit more artistry in your like like teenage or like, you know, post high school or college like comedies, you know, it's Waiting is going to be kind of the grosser option. But I'm kind of trashy, so I kind of go for that. But I should probably watch Adventureland sometime soon. I haven't watched that since I saw it first. So
my biggest issue with Waiting is that in Clerks, which I get that it's like, I know, I feel like any movie that just is about people working mediocre jobs and being shitty.
Yeah, like specifically is, like a day, like in the you know, from beginning to end,
is trying to replicate Clerks, and my biggest issue with Waiting is that in Clerks they establish and explain why Dante and Randall are the only ones working there and why they're both there all day. And in Waiting the movie opens with the opening of the restaurant, and then all of the waiters, busboys and cooks are there until close. And there are no shift changes, and it would drive me insane every time that I would watch it.
You know, it's funny that you bring that up, because a major plot point in the story of that movie is that there's a character who is apparently getting taken advantage of another worker who is not working that day, because he has to work a double shift because he took her shift. And like what you just said doesn't make any sense for the motivations of that character. Because it's like, well, everybody's already there all day anyway. Doesn't make
sense. You know, I feel like we could do a whole episode just on movies that are similar to Clerks. Because now I have a billion in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to cut this short and say, move on and say the worst thing that I saw recently was another film. Was likewise a film that I saw when I was younger, loved, revisited, and kind of had some problems with, and that is Swimming with Sharks. Have you ever seen it?
Ooh,
are you familiar?
I swear I've seen the trailer for it like a million times, and I remember you talking to me about it.
Yeah, I saw it, and I thought it was hilarious and great when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
I recently rewatched it, and part of it is I have a hard time watching a movie after we've, you know, all this stuff has come out about Kevin Spacey, and I have a hard time watching a movie that the whole theme is around him verbally harassing and abusing this young guy.
Mm-hmm. I think his name is like Frank Whalen. He's an okay actor. Yep. At the time.
Yep. And, so that was kind of difficult. The other thing is that it's such a dark movie, and I still think it's enjoyable. I just don't think that it has aged well, if that makes sense.
Would you say it's a product of its time?
Yeah, no, definitely. But I feel like it's... All right. I feel like it is a much darker version of, like, Office Space.
Okay.
Because it's about a guy... And this isn't a spoiler because they reveal this at the beginning of the movie. It's about a guy who is an assistant and his boss is literally just the worst person in the entire world and spends all day just verbally harassing him. And so the movie is flashbacks to Frank Whelan working for Kevin Spacey. And then in the present, he has taken Kevin Spacey hostage and torturing him because he found out that Kevin Spacey was going to fire him.
Hmm. You know, that's kind of funny that he's in Horrible Bosses as well.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because you say Horrible Boss, and I was just like, wait a second, why does this sound familiar?
He's in the second one, too.
Yeah, that was weird. Because I always thought spoilers for Horrible Bosses, like, he almost dies in the first one, but then they save him, incidentally.
Yep.
Yep. So that's why he's in the second one.
Yes.
Sorry, I derailed. But it's funny that like he's also that piece of garbage in that movie too.
Yeah. No, I feel like somebody watched this and was like, you know, what would be great if we did this, but with two other bosses.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know. I watched it and I enjoyed it, but there was just something about it that made me a little uncomfortable just due to the, I don't know, timing maybe, of like the world that we live in now and reporting abuse and stuff like that. And so I just don't know that it is as relevant and fun to watch as it was back then.
Right.
So that's what I have to say about that.
Okay.
What is the best thing that you have seen recently?
The best thing I have seen recently, and I might get some flack for this, if anybody's listening, who cares, but I watched Crank again, in the first time in a very long time, which is, honestly, before I watched it, it was just one of my favorite kind of, like, off-the-wall, kind of, like, super hype movie. I mean, it's the one that made me fall in love with Neville Dean and Taylor. As directors, because they like didn't really care. They just kind of like, they had this really like dumb idea for a movie, and they're like, oh well, we know like all these really cool things that we could do with camera shots, and we just have this weird sense of humor, and we have Jason Statham, and be like, oh okay, so like that series, well, the two movies hinges on like Jason Statham being like this, like, very, like, before that, he was in Snatch. Like, he was just this kind of, like, this, you know, cockney dude who, like, played the rough.
He'd done the Transporter, at least the first one.
Yeah.
By that point, too.
Yes. So he was established as, like, you know, an action star. And then have him do, like, honestly, what is kind of a screwball comedy with, like, a very, like, specific gimmick to the movie that he has to keep his adrenaline up because he has a poison that if he like lets his heartbeat go down, it's speed in a person. And I want to say that like the movie that you Swimming with Sharks, you said, what was it, also a film that hasn't aged well from the era that it's in, because there is definitely a lot of stuff that would not fly today, which kind of makes me dread if they're ever going to make a Crank 3. But, yeah, some stuff that I just kind of found a little off-putting. I won't say specifics, but, like, if you watch the movie, you can see it. I still enjoy it despite those aspects.
Yeah.
And the worst part is that I watched it with my nephews, which is, like, when did we watch it, Jason? Like, it was, like...
I remember.
It's, like, 2007...
Yep.
So it was like, no, I was a junior.
Mm-hmm. And, I was a senior.
And
in high school.
And it was just like, it was just fun. It was one of those movies to watch and you're just like, oh, this is just like, we want to watch it because, you know, it's Jason Statham and it's an action movie and it's rated R, blah, blah, blah. But like, yeah, that movie like really opened my eyes to almost like a renaissance of like when Robert Rodriguez did his El Mariachi for like so much money, like way before, like all of a sudden they're like doing this like super low budget thing, and like the second one does even weirder things with the low budget. Mm-hmm. But I still enjoy it. Kinks and all, you know, it's the same thing that like we had a conversation about like Kevin Smith last week about like, oh, can you go back to these things that like that are attached to a time and the things that you fell in love with and do they age well? And I honestly think that there's still something to appreciate about them.
Absolutely.
About both the movies. I just specifically watched the first one lately, and I would say anybody who hasn't seen it, I would watch it just for...
Highly recommend.
I would do a double feature. And just do one and two in one go. And if you're feeling adventurous, the third one, or actually put, like, Gamer in between the two of them. Because, like, Gamer is kind of a palate cleanser, and then the second one is just insane, Crank 2. But it's up to you. I mean, like, I could watch those movies, like, every night. That's just my problem, though. But, like, I still really enjoy that, so that's what I'll consider my best film that I saw this week.
I do want to say that going to see Crank 1 with you, and I'm pretty sure Jeff and Pat,
because
that was the old gang, was one of my favorite film-going experiences, simply because I don't know if any of us knew anything about it, and all I had seen was...
No, the marketing was awful.
Yeah, all I knew about it was the poster, and it was just Jason Statham's arm with, like, the word crank scratched into it, and then at the end of it, he's holding a gun. I was just like, oh, this is going to be an action movie, and I was not at all prepared for what we got, and it was great, because I feel like it's, you know, marketing is so much everywhere now, and it's so hard to get surprised by stuff like that, and that was really fun to go see that and just be completely and utterly blown away by pretty much everything in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Made my tiny head explode.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I today did a double feature of Shazam and Pet Sematary, the new one, obviously. And I really, really loved the new Pet Sematary. I'm a huge fan of the book. I am not a huge fan of the original movie. I think that a lot of the stuff in the book is scary because it takes place in your head. I don't think that it works well when you see it on a screen. But the new movie, pretty much after, and this isn't really a spoiler, because they show it in the trailer, and two, if you know anything about Pet Sematary, you know this is what the movie's about. They pretty much everything after the kid dies is different, and they do some interesting and fun things with the characters and how they tell the story. The other thing that was fun, or at least that made me realize I was watching a movie that I really enjoyed, is that it's one of those movies where you know where it's going. Like, okay, that's not true, because there was one person in the theater who, when the truck hit the kid, went, "Oh my god!" very loudly.
Oh my god!
Was very surprised. But other than that, I mean, I feel like you know that, like, it's a lot of the times when you watch movies like that, you can get that feeling of like, okay, I'm just waiting for the thing to start. And it wasn't a bad thing, but like the kid doesn't die until maybe an hour into the movie.
Wow.
And I did not feel at all at any point like I was waiting. Like I was like, all right, come on, let's get to the stuff. Let's get to the kid being creepy and the horror. I did not feel like that once. I was engaged the entire time, and I really enjoyed it and would highly recommend people go check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Also has Jason Clarke in it. I think that he is a severely underrated actor who's just in a lot of bad movies.
Yes.
And so he is always super fun to see as well.
Yes.
When he's in good stuff.
Yeah, please. Well, a good movie that I would say I'd check him out in is probably is War. War is the third Planet of the Apes film.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And then I would say, if you're a cheeseball like me who loves fucking trash. Oh, sorry, I said the F word. Let me start that. I can't say it without saying the F word. But if you watch, if you love trash, the clean version, I would say watch that Terminator
Genesis.
Movie. Yeah, Genesis, where he plays John Connor, and he. I wouldn't say he hams it up, but he is doing something in that movie, and it is not good, but I love it.
Awesome.
I think that is an underrated cheeseball classic. I think people should see that if they like trash movies.
I know, you've been telling me that for, I don't know, since it came out, and someday I will get around to watching it. But today is not that day.
Okay, fair enough.
Anyway, go watch Pet Sematary. It's great. All right, well, let's get into Shazam. What were your first impressions of the movie? Talk spoiler-free for a few minutes and then get into spoilers.
My impressions of the film is that it was a lot... like, because this is a PG-13 film.
Yes.
And from the marketing... I knew going in that it wasn't going to be as dark. Like, DC is kind of, Warner Bros. Has kind of figured out that they shouldn't do that anymore. They should, you know, have something that's a little bit lighter. But I was surprised at the amount of, like wonder and, like, kind of, like, sense of, like, nothing was ever really taken too seriously. Like, I'm not, like... because people think that if things aren't taken seriously in a superhero film, then there's no, like, weight or gravity to any of the characters, or, you know, people aren't doing a good job in the film, or, like, the director isn't doing a good job. But, like, it honestly does have, well, Shazam itself, or like, Billy Batson turns into Shazam, and he's a little kid in a grown man's body, like, specifically a superhuman, superhero body. And so, like, like, you can't get away from the fact that, and they play into the fact that it's kind of, like, more about the wonderment and the fantasy of being a superhero. And, like, I was surprised that it never got super dark. Like, and I, like, a lot of people have been clamoring that DC has been a little bit too grimdark. But, like, I wasn't actually thought I was missing it until I watched this movie. So it was really refreshing. I think that it kind of stumbles in some parts. It definitely didn't need to be over 2 hours long, but, but I liked the movie a lot.
Yeah, no, I definitely did too. I feel like DC has solved the problem of how to make a good superhero movie, and it's to just copy what Marvel does, which is not a bad thing. Because clearly what they're doing is working.
Yes.
And, yeah, no,
And honestly, it feels like a throwback to, like, the old Superman movies.
Yeah, it does. It was very... well, not cheesy. Cheesy's not the right word. It wasn't cheesy.
Cheesy. The word that kept going through my mind, though, when I was watching it was corny. Because I...
yeah, there you go.
Because... I was definitely cringing during some parts, but I felt like it wasn't wrong to cringe at those parts. Like, they weren't bad. It was just like, oh, this is a kid in a grown man's body. He is acting the way that a little kid would act if he was trying to be a grown-up. I would be like, these are bad, but, like, it's kind of true to the character, so I didn't mind it.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. I thought that they did... some interesting stuff that I was not expecting. I also just want to say real quick, I do not know a ton about Shazam.
Right.
So I am in no way an expert on him like I am on some other comic book characters. Well, I don't even know if I'd say I'm an expert. I don't know as near as much as I do about, like, Batman or Daredevil or people like that. But I thought that they did some interesting stuff, especially in the last act of the film, that took it in some unexpected directions. And I feel like we can get into spoilers now. So if you haven't seen Shazam and you want to not have anything spoiled, then you should stop listening. Come back when you have. Otherwise, we are now going to spoil literally every aspect of Shazam starting now. That was me banging my notepad on the table.
Jason.
What?
Wasn't it cool that after they went, they looked into the door with the alligators, the other kid looked into the door, and there was the tentacle monster from the mist? It was good.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I was not expecting that, and they did that for the second door, and I thought the rules of three would apply, and they just did not do another one, which I was kind of sad about.
No, they did open the third door. You just didn't get to see what was in it.
Oh, yeah, that's unfortunate. I thought there was going to be, like, a bigger DC reference, you know?
Yep.
Like, that was like, the perfect like the opportunity. Zone. Yeah. Yeah, I wonder what they would have seen in there, though. Because, like...
Oh, you know... Sorry, go ahead. I have the perfect thing, though, when you're done.
I just don't know, like, with how they're playing with the continuity of all these films since they've kind of, like, dissolved the universe as it was, and they're just going back to kind of, like, standalone films, is, like, what state would the Phantom Zone be in, and who would be in it, you know? Like, I think that would be interesting.
I have an answer for you.
What's that?
Have you seen the Lego Batman movie?
Yes, I have.
Because the Phantom Zone plays a large role in that film, and I just think it would have been hilarious if he opened the door and there was like a Lego version of Shazam opening the door on the other side or something.
Oh, it would have been so good. Also, right? I would have accepted because I'm pretty sure New Line and Warner Bros. Or yeah, New Line still has the. They still have the copyright. Like, they could use Sauron, right? Like, I was just expecting to see Sauron when they open the door. Or because I don't feel like they could do anything with Harry Potter because they do reference that earlier because, you know, Shazam is a wizard who gives the power to Billy Batson. And he's just like, be like, yeah, just like Harry Potter. And be like, oh, yeah, I get it. Warner Bros. Has Harry Potter. And they didn't make a Lord of the Rings reference, but, nah, that's just how it is.
I mean, to be fair, another Lego Batman reference. Voldemort and Sauron are both in the Phantom Zone.
Yeah, they're both in the yeah, very good. But anyway, let's get away from the doors. Let's talk a little bit more about.
you mean let's stop talking about a scene that's maybe a minute long?
I don't know. Very memorable though.
I'm really enjoying this. Yeah. No. I'm gonna skip to the end or near the end and say that one of what I was hinting at earlier with that they did some interesting things, and we can talk about, you know, the Shazam family because I have no idea if that's like a thing in the comics, but the thing that I enjoyed the most and that I was surprised how well it was done was the revelation about Billy Bats or Billy's mom.
Right. Yeah. That, I think that was probably the darkest thing in the movie.
Yeah, and it still wasn't super... Like, it was dark, and it was, you know, kind of messed up. But it wasn't because of how Billy handles it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that... Because they do something... Or they did something like that in... Which is... Spoilers for The Last Jedi. They basically do that in The Last Jedi with Rey's parents... And there's, like, just this not big payoff. And there really isn't a big payoff because you're expecting, like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm actually, like, a superhero and blah, or something like that. Like, some reason. And it's just like, oh, no, I just wanted to abandon you because you're a kid and you suck.
Or the thing that first came to my mind, which Billy actually says when the other kid like looks up and sees who his parents were, and be like, and your mom, and then he's just like, what, she dead? Because he doesn't say right away, and it's like, oh, that's exactly what I was thinking. And then it'd be like, well, no, it's something a little bit different. I did think it was weird that it was like, oh yeah, she's like two subway stops away, and I was just like, shut up. Like, have him, like, turn to Shazam and then, like, go back to Minnesota or something. Because I guess that's where, like, they lived. Because, like, they mentioned that specifically. And I was like, oh, Minnesota, cool. Shout out. Because it's in Philadelphia. So it's kind of, I don't know. It was weird. But, yeah, it was just, like, and then that interaction with the mom, like, it was, like, played down and, like, she's not in a great place and... like, she's not in really a better place than she was when he was a child and they were at the, you know, at the fair. And I do appreciate that they had a different, like, intonation for her dialogue when they met, and then it flashed back to that scene again. And then she's a little bit more exasperated as opposed to kind of this more motherly figure that he saw as a child. So I appreciated that touch.
Same. When you watched or when they showed that scene again, it was much more, I don't know, dramatic, I guess. Because when you first watch it, it's kind of funny, and then you watch it again and it's sad.
Very.
She talks about, you know, I was 17. You took my life away. Blah blah blah. So I really enjoyed that, and I thought that was just a very well done moment. What did you think of the end when he gives his siblings the Shazam power?
It was definitely something I was not expecting. Same. I did not see that coming at all. But even when Shazam was... because for some reason I had it in my mind that when he was going to touch the staff, because the staff is the thing that transfers the power, that's how he gets the power from the wizard Shazam... and then that's how the bad guy wants to transfer the power from him to him. He gets that, the dialogue from Wizard Shazam goes through his mind about, like, oh, your brothers and your sisters at their thrones, because he was the last one. And then that popped in his head. Like, even at that point, I was just like, oh, what's going to happen here? I thought he was going to, like, overload the staff or something like that, or he was gonna summon somebody, but no, he just he gave the power to his foster siblings, which are at that point his real family, because his mother is not really there, can't really be his real family, and he's made peace with that. And then it just kind of turned into like you can deal with like. With Billy Batson being in it, like a grown-up superhero body, and then you're like, oh, all these kids are now like in the grown-up superhero body, because he gave them all his power of Shazam, and then like, and that's where I say that it was corny, because like all the jokes they made and how they act is just like, some people would say that it's probably cringy. But I was just like, you know what? I want to say this is a weird sensation with, like, all these, like, bad jokes and, like, the gamer kid doing, Hadouken. Yeah. I was just like, I laughed at it because it was so stupid. And I was just, but that would be what a kid who plays video games would say. So I can't, like,
and then at the end when they all throw down their catchphrases.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, That whole bit was, it was really funny and really dumb, but I mean it made sense.
Yes, it did. And I did appreciate the part where he like puts the staff down and he's just like, everybody come in, touch the staff, and then say my name, and then they all say Billy, which I actually laughed pretty hard at.
Oh, that I think that got the biggest laugh in my theater.
It was very good.
It was just 'cause it was I don't. A lot of the other jokes they kind of set up in the trailer, which is a bummer, and I've seen the trailer a billion times because they showed it every single movie we went to. Not every, but you get my point.
Yeah.
I saw it a lot, and that one was just so unexpected. Yeah, no, that was that was really great, and I'm really glad that they made it such a fun movie. And I felt kind of bummed that they kept, and I have read this other places, so this probably isn't like an original me thought, but I was bummed that they kept making references to Batman, Superman, and Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I was like, this movie is so much fun. Why do you need to remind me of those piles of crap?
It's true, but I feel like they skirt around it because, like, Marvel even has this issue where, you know, there's specific references made to specific people or specific things that happen in the universe and in other movies. And in this case, I feel like they just kind of play around with it as opposed to having it crowd into what the story is.
That's true because, like, one of the examples is that kid's T-shirt or Freddy's T-shirts. And how he's got the Aquaman symbol and the Superman symbol, and then he's got the Batarang. And I guess the equivalent I was thinking of is in Spider-Man Homecoming when Hannibal Buress's character wheels out the TV with Captain America and is like, I'm pretty sure this guy is a war criminal now, but here, watch this video.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that stuff I really appreciate. But, and, like, you know, Freddy has all these, like, little trinkets, and, like, he has, like, a replica Batarang, which is very similar to what the, you know, the new Batman Batarang is. And then also, you know, like, one of the bullets that bounced off Superman, which probably isn't the case, but, like, it's a souvenir that he bought.
Yep.
And he...
Ooh, quick note.
Yeah.
Did you happen to notice what the signature was on the certificate of authenticity?
No, who was it?
I could be 1,000,000,000% wrong, but I am 99% sure that it said Warner Brothers.
No. That's not that. No. That's bad, Jason. I don't want to believe it.
I know.
Warner Brothers.
Stupid.
That's bad. Are you saying, is this like a weird, like, Ubisoft in, like, Assassin's Creed, not to, like, be a game nerd, but they put themselves in their own game, and I don't feel like that Warner Bros. Put themselves in, like, the universe, and, like Superman and Batman in the DCEU is actually, or, you know, is actually, like, owns the property of Superman and Batman, or, like, had the licenses to them. Because that's kind of what it feels like, because there's merchandising everywhere of, like, Superman and Batman and Aquaman, like you said, like, Freddy's wearing those shirts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, yeah, it's...
I mean, look, I hope I'm wrong, but I'm 99% sure that's what it said. One other quick Easter egg, I don't know if you caught, did you happen to catch the Captain America reference?
I guess not.
Because one of the recurring jokes through the movie is that they don't know what to call Billy's superhero alter ego, and so Freddy keeps coming up with these different names,
Captain Sparkle Fingers.
Yep, and there's this montage where they show a bunch of YouTube videos of him doing his testing, and there's one where his name is Zaptain America.
That's really bad.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's easier for him to make a Captain reference. Jesus. A Captain America reference as opposed to literally the Captain Marvel reference, which I don't know if anyone knows this, but a lot of people know this. But, like, quite a while ago, DC decided to rebrand. Like, Shazam wasn't always Shazam. Shazam used to be Captain Marvel, and we just had a Captain Marvel movie come out, and so you can kind of see. I think it was mostly just brand confusion is what happened.
I'm just gonna go ahead and say because we've explained this to Caitlin a couple times. If you really want to know what happened, just Google it.
Yeah, seriously. We're not supposed to be like the end all be all encyclopedia of DC copyright issues or why they changed their brand name and why they say like, oh, like why they reboot their comics like every 2 years. Just terrible. But anyway, it's incredible we got two Captain Marvel films in like 2 months. It's great.
It is. And yeah, no, I mean, I really liked this. I was going to ask, did you have, like, a favorite moment or anything that popped out at you that you particularly enjoyed?
Well, it's so funny because I think Mark Strong is, like, he's a presence. I think that people throwing him into villain roles, and I think he does an okay job just because I like listening to his voice. I think he's kind of funny.
Agreed.
But it's the same thing. Like, Mark Strong was also the bad guy in John Carter, and like he was kind of milquetoast in that. But there's a specific scene, and I'm not a huge big fan. Big with Tom Hanks in it, where weirdly enough a small kid is put into a grown man's body, much like this film. And you know, this movie owes a lot to that film in how it kind of like plays with that. But they're specifically when they're in the mall and Mark Strong is like chasing after him, and it almost reminded me of like it's a specific big reference, but it kind of reminded me of like a joke Edgar Wright would do. Where, mm-hmm. like, Billy as Shazam is, like, walking backwards. It's after the part where he throws the Batman doll that you probably see in the trailer. Where he's, like, walking backwards and he's on one of those foot keyboards that would be in a toy store in a mall. And, like, that's a specific reference to Big. But he looks down and he's like, oh, and he just kind of moves around, like hits a few keys. And then you just hear like, you know, the rhythmic up, like down the key range. And he looks up and it's Mark Strong, like running at him. And I was just like, that's a good shot. That's a good joke. Yep. Like, I don't know why that like sticks out specifically in my mind, but it's just really good.
I think that. For me, one of the things that I thought was the funniest, and that I also feel like they spent a little bit too much time on, was the idea of, as soon as he gets his powers, they're like, how can we monetize this?
Well, that's just this day and age, Jason.
Which I thought was both funny, and they also spent just a little bit too much time milking it for. But yeah, no, that movie is one delightful. Delightful. There we go. It's delightful.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll add on to that monetizing thing and say, like, I think we have what could have been cut is maybe like 5 minutes of him. Because it seems like they go back to the same well even after I feel like the joke's been played. It's like he's going around, he's trying to get selfies with people and getting tips from them. And, and then he's on, you know, in front of the Museum of Science, which I think it's the Museum of Science in Philadelphia where, you know, the Rocky Steps are. And he's doing, like, Eye of the Tiger with his zappy hands. And I was just like, this is so dumb. But I couldn't help but laugh. It's one of those things where, like, it's so dumb. But, like, I admire the bravery of putting into a film. Because it's so dumb, it makes me laugh. Because I'm like, how did this get this way? It's almost like, and I've seen the comparisons to, like, this is kind of like their Deadpool, but it's not rated R. Is that just, like, why would they do this? But, like, it's not vulgar at all. It's just, like, it's not mean-spirited. It's just, like, it's too pure to hate, but you can't help but be like, oh, like you kind of get embarrassed for the characters, but it's all good. Like, yeah, I don't know. That's what I would say. It's like, it's something that you can't actually be mad at, and you might find yourself hating yourself for liking it as much as you do, but it is a very likable movie. Like, you know, Zachary Levi is just too good in the role.
Yeah, no, that whole cast was just super fun to watch. And the whole movie is hopefully a sign of a positive turning point for DC.
Yeah, that's right.
I do also want to say that I thought that they explored the family tragic origin backstory stuff, and just outside of the moment that we mentioned with where he finds his mom, I thought that they did a great job showing how he accepts his new family without doing the version that we've seen in like Guardians of the Galaxy that's been done to death, where he's just like, oh yeah, now we're a family. And you know, the fact that he trusts he doesn't come out and say it, but when he gives them his power, it's, you know, that great moment where you're like, oh okay, yeah, he trusts and loves these people. And I just really appreciated that. So that being said, I know that you had a recommendation for people who enjoyed Shazam.
Oh man, do I, Jason. I was so happy this came to mind, because I always feel like I'm scraping. Like, last week's recommendation for us, I felt like I think I connected enough to it, and I was able to think of it off the top of my head to connect the two and feel like it was a good recommendation. But this week, Jason...
Yes.
This is a home run. This is a home run. If you haven't watched it, oh, it's so good. Please watch Sky High. I believe it's Disney's Sky High, where it's like a bunch of kids of like last generation superheroes go to a school to become superheroes or supervillains, and the whole cast is fantastic. There's at least like, I think, 3 out of the 4 kids in the hall in it that play teachers, which is very good. But and then Kurt Russell is like the main character's dad. I can't remember who the mom is. But like, there's all these like, it's so goofy, and like, it's stuff that you think would be like on the nose and just kind of dumb, but like, it plays super well with like these kids that are trying this, you know, that are trying to grow up and not be their parents, and you know, parent issues, you know, figuring out who you are, kids who may have like a bad rep, like someone who you think would be a villain turns out not to be a villain, and then the actual villain is someone that you, I would say, you probably wouldn't expect. And I haven't watched the movie in a long time, but like, I remember that being really good. And like, I don't think it's something that like only kids like. I've enjoyed like my generation's like live action Disney films, but I feel like that one like was straddling the line. Like, I shouldn't have been enjoying those kind of films at that point. But something about that movie is just so. It's just so funny and like pure-hearted, just like this movie is, and it has the same kind of corniness that I feel like it's such a strong recommendation from me. It's because it's just, I honestly think it was like born out of the same kind of DNA as this film. I wouldn't be surprised if we get like some behind the scenes or commentary for Shazam and like Sky High isn't referenced, because I think like it has that much DNA with this film, like matching. Yeah. And I would recommend anyone go see that, because if they want like some lighthearted, like superhero kind of goofiness and like just playing with different powers and like the sense of discovery and kind of wonderment of the superhero genre before, you know, it had to be like all this interconnecting stuff, or you know, it had to be like tragedy, like, oh, who's gonna die in this movie, how is it gonna affect the universe, stuff like that. Like, if you just want like a good old-fashioned like just kind of superhero romp with kind of like a, you know, a school twist, like it's very good. And the cast is like ridiculous. Like, I mentioned Kurt Russell and like I said, the kids in the hall appearances, and Mary Elizabeth Winstead, and It's just it's just a good cast.
All right, I have a recommendation also, which is that if you enjoyed this, you should just watch the Marvel movies, because that's what this is.
You're so cynical, Jason.
Yes. No, I don't really have a recommendation. I would like to quickly wrap up by saying that there were two kids, or no, not two kids. There was a group of four young adults sitting next to me, and they talked the entire movie, and they spent the whole movie talking about how the DC EU or whatever it's called is better in every way than the Marvel movies.
Oh man, and I can't even start the irony of that, Jason.
Right? They were very vocal, and I was getting very annoyed. Part of me was annoyed with the content of their conversation because they were talking about how much Thor Ragnarok sucks. I think Thor Ragnarok is a delightful, amazing film, and I love Taiki Waititi, or however you say his name. And Taiki Waititi. And I mostly just felt annoyed because they were talking at full volume.
Yeah, that's an issue.
Through almost this whole movie. And so at the end of it, they didn't get up. Like, even after the final post-credit scene play, they were all just sitting in their chair talking about... They were bitching about how bad Ant-Man is. Which, I don't understand how they got on that.
Jason!
But as I was walking out of the theater, I yelled at the top of my lungs, DC sucks. Which I thought was really funny.
Mm-hmm.
And... very petty, which is in line with my character. And then I promptly ran out of the theater.
Yeah. That's a nice one.
Because I'm one of the cool kids.
Of course you are. Was it you watched Shazam and then you went into Pet Sematary? Because I know you did a double feature.
No, we watched Pet Sematary first.
Okay.
Well, I figured that out of the two... Pet Sematary would be the one that I would want to be the most cognizant for.
And you knew you were going to be a little bit gone after sitting in a theater chair and then knowing you have to go into another one?
No, it was more just like when we watched, or when I watch Grindhouse now, I always watch Death Proof first.
Yes.
Just because Death Proof is one that you have to pay more attention to, whereas Planet Terror is just more entertaining. And you don't have to be as focused.
I love Grindhouse, but yes, there's no... If you're doing a double feature, you have to keep that in mind. Like,
yep.
Death Proof is the slower movie, and I understand Absolutely. That you want to... I don't know, you don't want to start with a showstopper. And I'm not saying... Of the two movies, Planet Terror is definitely the one that has aged the least, or aged the worst. But it's... I've grown an appreciation. I think Death Proof is super good. And if... I think people would have been bored at first, but I think it would have been the right tone. I personally think that if Death Proof had gone first, it would lulled people into, like, this weird sense. I just feel like... The only thing that I would say why Death Proof was second is because the end is so high. Like, I feel like the energy once you get to the very end of Death Proof is the highest, and they wanted to leave on the highest, like, energy they could. Because Planet Terror honestly ends on a downer. And
that everybody dies.
Yeah, if you had left the theater after the end of Planet Terror, I feel like that would have been an issue. So I think you were probably right in watching the horror movie first, and then when you have something that's a little bit more bombastic and a little bit easier to digest, I think you made the right decision.
That was my logic.
And it worked out for the most part, right?
It did.
Other than the fact that there were people talking in the theater.
Yep.
That's honestly...
My drive-by DC sucks.
True. And then also, if we're talking about movie going woes here, I also had a few people who were talking in my theater, but They were far enough away that I kind of only heard like mumbles, like they weren't speaking at full volume like your problem people were. I honestly don't know where I was going with that.
Okay.
Well, no. The thought came into my mind. Sorry. The thought that came into my mind was like, okay, you're going to a movie. You're paying an admission fee to see a movie. You're going there for the movie. You're watching a movie. I don't understand why people would pay money to go into a dark room to talk for 2 hours.
Right.
It's not your living room. Go to your living room and talk in your living room for 2 hours. I don't care. It's not my living room. I don't have to listen to you. But when you're in a theater, that's why I feel like every single theater should be an Alamo draft house. Because like you should be able to hit a button and then be like, I'm sorry, but you're disturbing other people. Because I feel like just because you pay for a movie does not give you the right to talk during a movie. I'll see the occasional like phone like around the theater, like in front of me or like to my left. Sometimes you get kind of like that shine in the corner of your eye, which like as long as it's not too bright, I really don't care, as long as like they're not on it consistently. Like if they're checking something and putting it away, whatever. Like I've seen more egregious examples of that. But I know it's like one of those old man things, but it's like something that I feel like should have been addressed a long time ago. And I think maybe the theater chains just are desperate enough for cash that they don't want to like kick people out.
100% agree.
And offend people because, oh, we're so sorry that we had to kick you out because you're being a piece of shit. Get out of our theater. You're talking during the movie. I wish I could be that person, but I can't.
I do want to say that I also had an interesting experience watching Pet Sematary, because in our row there was this couple, and every 5 minutes one of them would get up, go outside, or not, I mean like leave the theater, come back smelling like cigarette smoke.
Makes sense.
And they would just take turns, and it was like every 5 minutes. And then about 40 minutes into the movie, they left for about 20 minutes, came back for about 10 minutes, and then just left. Which I thought was really funny. I don't know what was going on in those people's lives, but it was their journey through that film was fascinating to me.
Oh, and Jason, we don't need to go into a huge thing about it, but did I ever ask you, and did you ever tell me if you had paid for a movie and you'd walked out of it?
I have. Have you?
I did. It was Super 8.
Really?
Yeah. And it wasn't... Well, obviously, it wasn't because of the movie. And I honestly haven't watched it since it came out. I went to go see it in the theater, and there was this lady who just wouldn't stop talking. Like, I give people the benefit of the doubt during the trailers, during, like, the first, like, minute or so during the movie. This was, like, 10 minutes into the movie, and she was still talking like the previews were on. I know some people like to watch previews, but like watch them on YouTube, whatever. But she just would not stop. And like, she had like 12 kids with her. I think it was like maybe like a group. I can't be for sure. Like the memory is pretty stuck in my head, but not like, I don't remember all the details, but there were some like girls in front of, where I was sitting that were like on their phone. I was like, I don't mind the phones being out. Someone talking during the movie, I can't handle. And same. I think I did the petty thing, what you did, which is like, don't do like specific conflict or contact with the person who's having causing the issue. Like, just do something to like the entire theater and then hope they shut up, which I don't know what I was thinking, but my idea was to shush her because I wanted to be that bitch. And I was just like, and I was just like, shh, like a very directed shush, like not like, shh, like, and she came,
you were going full blown shh.
Yeah. She looked back at me and she was like, did you just shush me? Like, I never in my entire life have I ever been shushed. And I was just like, well, it was about time. And then, she was just like, she would, so the talking that she had been doing 10 minutes into the movie, I could feel was only getting worse. I think she was only going to try to pick a fight. She spat off her opening salvo. And I was like, she's not going to leave. I can tell she's not going to leave. And if I get into a conflict with her now or a conversation, she's going to go out and speak to management or whatever and try to get me kicked out. I could just see it. I could see it like Nostradamus in my head. I could see what was going to happen. So I was just like, oh my God, the rest of the people in this room can deal with her. I'm not going to deal with her. She was just like, oh, what about those girls up front on their phones? Why aren't you getting after them? And I was just like, because you're talking. And then she just kind of like shushed for a second. And then she like started at me again. I just got up and left. I don't need to deal with that. And I was just like, it's not worth it. Because like at that point, my theater, the admission for the time when I went to go see it, it was only like $6. So I was like, I'm just going to cut my losses and leave.
I have walked out of one movie, and it was not because of a bad experience. I'm just going to share this one experience, and then we can wrap up theater talk with Jason and Ben. But it was due to content, and it was the movie Grown Ups. That my dad offered to take my brother and I to a movie, and I'm always down to go see a movie. Don't care what it is. If we're going to the theater, I'm game.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided that we were going to go see Grown Ups, and I just kind of laughed, and I went with them. And about 30 minutes into the movie, my father
dawns on you.
No. My father leaned over to me and said, I want to go. And I said,
oh,
I've wanted to go since we got here. So we got up, grabbed my brother, and left.
Jeez Louise.
One of the best decisions I think I've ever made.
That's pretty good.
Because I will say that, you know, argue what you want about Adam Sandler's quality of movies. I will happily agree most of them after a certain period have not been good. They're at least somewhat there's usually at least somewhat some form of entertainment value.
Yeah.
In watching a comedy where people are genuinely trying. And in this, I was just sitting, staring at a screen, feeling bored. There was just nothing happening except for them laughing a lot.
Yeah. On that note, just real quick. I remember, I don't know if anyone remembers the movie, the first Final Fantasy movie they made, which is called The Spirits Within, and I was just a little kid, and I went with my friends, because I was like, let's go see this Final Fantasy movie, you know, it's going to be cool, because it's based off a video game, and like, I didn't mind it, because like, at a young age, I had a taste for trash, so I loved watching it, and just the fact that they were making like a CG movie, it was just kind of like, very entertaining to me. But my friends were not having it, and they were just like, I want to go, I'm going to leave. And I was just like I had walked out with them because in solidarity, because I didn't know what else to do. But like, I remember talking in the hallway right outside the theater, like, and I was just like, I'm going to go back in. I paid for this. I'm going to go back in and watch it. And also, I don't think it's that bad because I thought it, like, that movie gets a lot of crap, but like, I was just like, I'm watch it till the end. We're not actually that far from the end. I don't know why you guys want to leave. And also, we can't drive, so I don't know where you guys are going to go. And I was just like, that was the one time where I was just like, what do you guys think you're doing? I'm going to go back into the theater. And then I was able to bring them back in there, and I guess they suffered for like another 30 minutes. I was like, what? Like, even at that age, I was just like, why would you walk out of a movie that you paid for?
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Let's wrap up this edition of Theater Talk with Jason and Donnie and get into, I don't know, some alliteration involving the letter D.
The spec D.
What's that?
The letter D. Go on.
Yep. The letter D for DCEU dictation. I don't know. That's bad. That's not a good one. Who? All right. So here's what we know about is Ben Affleck. First, let's just start with the first one. Ben Affleck has said that he has no interest in coming back to play Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Who would you cast as Batman?
Diedrich Bader. All right. If I was being honest, I would probably say.
Wait. Real quick, bear in mind, like, it's not. It doesn't get to be like your version of Batman, but like this kind of murdery older version of Batman. Like,
oh, bring George Clooney back.
George Clooney?
Yeah. Absolutely. Wait, no. Who's? Oh no. You know what? Let's scrub the fact that J.K. Simmons was Commissioner Gordon in the horrible, you know, Batman film,
Justice League,
in Batman vs Superman, because that's mostly where. But yeah, he was also in Justice League. Let's scrub that, and then like I would just want him to be, because like he was getting super jacked for those films. I remember seeing the photo of him like working out and be like, J.K. Simmons is going to, like, get into some shit in these films. Be like, no, I guess they just, like, gave him a personal trainer, and they, like, and I'm sure he enjoyed it, like, getting into shape. But, like, he got into shape for, like, two scenes that he did nothing in.
Yep.
And I was just like, just no, if you want, like, a bitter old Batman, put J.K. Simmons in it and just, like, have him, like, it was almost... It would be almost like, because my answer for everything, honestly, is Tom Hardy. Just put Tom Hardy in the role, because. But like, we can't do that. We can't have Tom Hardy play every single character. You know those memes of like every single Avenger with like Nicolas Cage's face on it.
Yep.
I can't do that with Tom Hardy. But yeah, if we're talking about like old grizzled, yeah. I mean, put.
J.K. Simmons.
Oh my god. Yes, put J.K. Simmons in there. Like, I think it would be funny. It'd be good stuff.
That'd be fun. I'd be on board for that.
Mm-hmm. We just need more J.K. Simmons shouting, and I want to see what his Batman voice would be.
Right? It'd just be Whiplash again.
Oh, man. That's bad.
Whiplash 2, the Batman.
What about you? If you're still sticking to your rules of, like, the older Batman, like, who would you want in the role?
Well, all right. My first answer was Idris Elba.
Mm-hmm.
Just because...
Yeah, we need a black Batman, for sure.
Well, it's more like you, where, you know, Tom Hardy should play everything. I think Idris Elba should be in everything.
Very good.
And I think he should play every character.
I mean, we're at the point now where Idris Elba is definitely, like, he's a very prolific actor, and I think he has enough range to play everybody. I think he's good. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, he's great. I feel like my normal answer would, or my other normal answer would be Michael Shannon, just because I also love Michael Shannon and I think he's amazing and should play everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to shock you and not say Michael Shannon.
Wait, hold on a second. Right? There we go. That picked up better on the mic.
that was a better one.
Yeah.
that was a better. That one really nailed it for you.
Oh yeah, I see the wave, so it's good. We're good here. you were talking about Michael Shannon and how it can't be that.
Oh yeah, no, I don't know. I don't think that that Michael Shannon would be I don't think that he would do. I don't think that his Batman voice would be very good. I think that it would be fun to watch him play like an old Bruce Wayne. Anyway, I just forgot who I had picked, and now I can't remember his name.
For Batman?
Yeah. There was somebody other than Idris Elba that I thought of. And
Daniel Craig?
Nope, it's not him. I don't know. Let's just say it was John Hamm.
John Hamm. Well, I definitely saw all the art of him being Superman. I don't think I'd peg him for a Batman, though. But that's interesting.
I would love to see John Hamm play Batman.
John Hamm would be a good Bruce Wayne. Yes. I don't know about Batman.
I think he could pull it off.
Okay. All right.
All right. So next up, let's talk about the other big things that people have been talking about. The only two confirmed characters coming back for that are going to be played by the same actors and actresses for the next Suicide Squad are Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
And then Viola Davis as Amanda Waller.
Okay.
Because, and first they said that Idris Elba was going to play
Deadshot.
Mm. And now they've backtracked on that, saying they want to leave the role open in case
Will Smith wants to come back to it?
Yes.
Okay.
Which I don't know why he would, but okay. So that being said, I mean, no other. First, who would you want to see Idris Elba play? Like, which villain would you want to see Idris Elba play?
I would honestly love to see Idris Elba take over the Ra's al Ghul role. I think he would be really good on that.
That would be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, honestly, that was the first thing that came to mind, just because, like, he has, like, this old world wariness to him, and I feel like maybe it's just because I just, like, saw him in the Dark Tower, and that has to deal with, like, loops of time and stuff like that, and, like, immortality, like, eternal struggle between good and evil, but, like, I feel like he's played more than one role where he's, like, was, like, an immortal or something. Like, I always have that. Oh, yeah, in Star Trek Beyond, he was the villain in that, and he lived for, like hundreds of years because he kept on, like, sucking the energy, the life force out of aliens, and that's why he looked the way he did.
Yep.
So, like, he lived for a long time in that. So, like, I always have Idris Elba connected in my brain with, like, immortality, and that's essentially Ra's al Ghul's thing. And I think, like, that would be a perfect fit if they wanted to do that again. But, like, that was that whole Dark Knight trilogy was pretty much Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah, no, that would be cool. I don't know that I have an answer off the top of my head, just because I don't know. Nothing's really coming to me. Super intensely.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you, and it involves the new casting of an actor into a character role that's been played by a bunch of people. But we're getting Joker this year, and it's being played by Joaquin Phoenix, and the trailer's out, and it looks good. I think it looks good. I have high hopes for that film. Like, outside of, like, because that almost seems like a standalone thing. Like, it's a very character-driven thing. Like, do you see them, like, doing another Joker? Like, does that seem like something that's just going to be a standalone and just be like, hey, this is going to be, like, a one-off joke or a one-off story? Sorry. I was already kind of, like, putting my answer into question. I don't know how that movie's going to play out, but it seems like that's only going to be for, you know, for that movie.
That one movie.
And then it's not going to be able to play into, like, a more bombastic kind of, like, superhero film that we've been accustomed to from DC and we have been a long time from Marvel. So, like, who else would, like, be able to play the Joker? Because, like, there's been so many iterations of this so many iterations at this point. It's weird for me to, like, think of anybody else anymore.
Excluding Idris Elba and Tom Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
All of those I would totally watch be the Joker. I mean, you know, there's the obvious answer, which is Tommy Wiseau.
Yep.
If you haven't seen his audition,
yeah, he's done like tape. He's like done two or three of them, so you have plenty of material to work with,
and they're amazing.
It's pretty good.
I mean, honestly, okay. I feel like if we're going to go with an old grizzled Batman, I would want an older Joker. So probably still someone in that age range. So Michael Shannon.
Shut up. I hate you so much. I would not say Michael Shannon. I'm not saying that he's not great. Because he is. No, and honestly, any time that he smiles freaks me out. So it probably would work. Like, he has the range. He could make it work. I was actually thinking the opposite. Because you think that, like, if you're having an old grizzled Batman, you would need a Joker who's, like, playing off him. But I always feel like... And, like, this has been proven with, like, Batman Beyond. If you've ever watched that series, it's like... The Joker has become more, so much of an idea that it has gone, like, there's, like, the Joker's gang now in Batman Beyond.
Yep.
And I feel like, old grizzled Batman would, like, have retired because the Joker died of, like, his own, like, act. Or he, like, retired because the Joker died and he killed him or he felt bad about it, so he had to retire. And then that would be the whole thing is that he comes out of retirement because... You know, he has to deal with this one last threat, whatever the movie would be. But, like, I feel like the Joker would be, like, this weird young upstart who would, like, bring about the ideas of what the Joker was all about and be this, like, anarchist uprising that, like, Bruce Wayne hasn't, like, gotten an apprentice and, like... All the Robins are off doing their own thing, so he has to come out and deal with this threat for the last time and try to, like, crush the spirit of anybody who would, like, rise up against him. And so it would be a young Joker who would be super twisted and be played by Paul Dano. I would love to see that.
Ooh, I'd be on board with that. Yeah, that would be great. He would do really good.
And I wouldn't mind if there was a little religious twist in there, because, like, I'm thinking of his character from There Will Be Blood, honestly.
Well, and then you could recast Harley Quinn as Daniel Radcliffe and just have a Swiss Army Man sequel.
So. Gross. But I get you.
I'm
not saying no.
No, all right. The only reason that I'm saying it should be, like, an older grizzled one is because in Dawn of Justice, they severely hint that the events of... Death in the Family have already happened.
Right.
Which, for those of you who aren't familiar, Death in the Family is when Joker kills Robin, or Jason Todd.
Dick Grayson... So it is Jason Todd, yes. Sorry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Dick Grayson's Nightwing at that point. So... And that is what... the sets up... the Red Hood series.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, no, I was going to say, if we are going older, I would absolutely love it if, and it's somebody who's played a similar role before, and sorry, I am trying to reach my pad of paper. So that I can pull up. It's Dominic West, right?
Oh, yeah, sure. Which
from The Wire, and from my main inspiration was his role in Punisher Warzone.
Yeah, Jigsaw.
Yeah, I would love to see him play the Joker, because he is, one, he's just a really great actor, and second, I watching him be bananas as Jigsaw was so much fun.
I would say if anybody wants to, I'm pretty sure it's on YouTube or something, but if you want to get what we're, like, getting at with him, just look up, like, Jigsaw speech, Punisher Warzone, because he does this, like, very, like, patriotic, like, America, gather your troops and your sons thing, and it's, like, one of the most ridiculous things. It's, like, the great thing about that movie is, like, as gleeful as, like, Shazam is about, like, being... kind of uplifting and very family friendly. Like, that movie is so joyous about being so vulgar and cruel about, like, what the Punisher is. And, like, it, like, it's so gleeful about its violence that, and the villain is just, like, if you can't stand ham and cheesiness and corniness, like, I don't know if you, he literally chews the scene in that movie.
He does. And I also just want to quickly jump back over to Theater Talk and say that that was another movie that I had super low expectations for that I went to see with you and walked away having one of the best times I've ever had at the theater. I think that is one of the most underrated movies that there is. It is so much fun.
Yeah.
And so violent.
It's so good. And I still, to this day, the one thing that feels like a tragedy to me is that they're, the original cut of that movie, or the essentially what they had is everything that they wanted to, like, nothing was cut, or it doesn't seem like things were done by studio standard as far as content of the actual movie goes. But they had a completely different soundtrack to that movie, and I want to listen to that soundtrack. I want them to at least like be able to put that back into the movie, because, as the director herself has said, like, that the soundtrack that they, like, the studio imposed on her is not very good. Thankfully,
they
just kept telling her,
do The Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm. And, like, what they had was so much better. So, like, I would say go and look that stuff up. I don't know if they've ever made it public, as far as I know, but
I don't believe they have.
Yeah.
I doubt they ever will.
But, like, the rest of the movie, just it still stands up as one of those, like just B-movie, like, midnight movie, like, just kind of, like, just embrace the fact that it's just going to be this weird thing, and you'll probably have fun with it.
Yes. All right. So I have a question for you, which is, and then we'll probably start wrapping this this discussion up. For Suicide Squad, which villains would you like to add to the team? Because one of my biggest issues with the last movie is that there were, like, two people on that team that made sense, and it was the guy that can just... Pyro, is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
Or Inferno, whatever his name was?
Yeah.
He made sense, and Deadshot made sense, and that was about it for me.
Right.
I didn't feel like the rest of them really needed to be there. So... I guess if you could add some people, who would you throw on the team, or who would you want to see them put on the team?
Right. And I would say, I mean, that's a really good question. Like, I don't know. Because, like, it's essentially, like, pulling what would be my favorite villain that I would see, like, being forced to be good or having to go on said suicide mission, in which the Suicide Squad is mostly named for, because that's their whole purpose. I would say...
Yeah, go ahead.
I actually don't have anything, like, super great. If you have something, I would say it before it leaves your brain.
I mean, the big one to me, and I know that we've gotten two portrayals of him already in other Batman movies, but I would like to see a more accurate to the comics representation of Bane.
Yeah.
I think that would be really fun. And also to introduce the, I know that that's something that they kind of hint at in The Dark Knight Rises, but, you know, him breaking, the bat and being able to explore that a little bit. But I really like Bane, and I think that it would be fun to see, like, a more accurate representation of him on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
I would also be down to see, although I don't know if he would be a totally relevant character for Suicide Squad, I would like to see a version of the Riddler that is not awful.
That's true. I mean, like, it, once again, it kind of depends on, because, like, what is the first thing that comes to mind when you think of the Riddler? Is it Jim Carrey?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unfortunately?
Yes, sadly.
Okay. Because, like, I have so much fond memories, because, like, most of the 1960s series, the live-action series with Adam West, rest in peace, was, like, very much, like, the villains being super campy and over top. And, like, it was mostly about the villains just getting up to hijinks in that show. And that Riddler was so, like, he just laughed all the time, which at some point you're just like, are you just the Joker, like, without the makeup? But, like, I very much got his gleefulness and, like, telling riddles. But, yeah, it's a really strange line, because I don't think they've ever really nailed the Riddler in like live action, and like I feel like he's always a little bit too maniacal. Like, obviously you got to be a psychopath to do the riddles and do the things that like the Riddler does, but it would, yeah, introducing him as like someone who's like helpful or like has to be a good guy, I think would be maybe one of the only ways that you could get people to understand what kind of character he is.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. Like, Jim Carrey is a horrible start. I mean, I like Jim Carrey for some things. That movie was a travesty from beginning to end. And I still watch it from time to time. I'm not going to say I don't. But it's not good.
Yeah, no, I like watching it mostly just because I know that Tommy Lee Jones absolutely despised Jim Carrey, and that they were constantly feuding off screen.
Oh, there's some, I can't remember them off the top of my head, but there are some choice quotes from Tommy Lee Jones about Jim Carrey, and I can't remember them off the top of my head, but they're so good.
Yeah.
You were saying, speaking of people who are mostly in green, I would like to see another female presence on a Suicide Squad. Mm-hmm. I would like to see Poison Ivy on there.
That would be sweet.
Because, and I know they're thinking about doing, you know, Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy, because they've been gal pals before, and like their dynamic is pretty funny. But like, Poison Ivy isn't necessarily evil.
No.
Not as much as like some other Batman villains.
Well, her motivation is to protect plants, and as silly as that might sound, it actually makes a lot of sense, and it makes her a more interesting character, because she's not, it's not like, oh, I gotta do this stuff to support me, it's, oh, am I doing the right thing to support this group that I'm here to protect?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like, and modern iterations of her have been a little bit like more even keel and more like, be like, why would you destroy these rainforests? She's more of like an activist, mm-hmm, and vocal protester to all the things that, like, especially Bruce Wayne, who owns a giant company that probably causes as much waste, and you know, that's a huge issue for her, is just like not have her portrayed as a villain, because she has been like, you know, helpful in the past. Like, her and Batman have worked together to a certain extent. Like, it's, she's not, so like, I feel like her powers would actually add to the team, like, instead of Harley Quinn just being like, I have a bat. Like, that's, no, you don't have any superpowers. Your superpower is essentially, I like to hit things, and I like to smile and laugh, and it's funny,
and I'm crazy.
Instead of, you know, having this kind of like a more even-keeled female voice on the team who was just like, you guys are all idiots. Don't do that.
Yep. Yep.
And she, I mean, yeah, I'm just going to stop there.
All right. Well, I think that covers a lot of what I wanted to chat about. So, with that being said, thank you so much for listening. Caitlin and I are still working on her pop reaction videos, which will hopefully be up soon. Donnie, would you like to plug your Twitter account?
Yeah, you can scream at me. I am at. So I'll just spell it out. It's technically Dog Eon the Third, which is DogEonThe3RD.
And I do not have a Twitter, but you told me once that you were going to make me one and just post things that I don't agree with to inspire me to make a Twitter. Did you ever actually follow through on that?
No, I already have too many Twitter accounts that I have to take care of. So I honestly,
okay, I was just curious.
No offense, do not have the time. Because honestly, the only thing I would do is just post that same poster of Jason Mantzoukas from John Wick 3 every day until it comes out. And that would be the only, you know, like those accounts that just, the same picture of Jeff Goldblum every day. Like, yep. That's essentially what I would do.
All right. Now I have an important question for you that has been weighing on everyone's minds. Have you watched Source Code yet?
No, I have not. I have not watched Source Code.
Okay. I have not watched Alpha, although I did see a clip of it, so I'm moving in the right direction.
If you watch a clip of it, isn't there a potential that you will see that it's not a good movie and you will not want to watch it?
Maybe, but I am gonna watch it. I said that I was gonna watch it and rank it compared to Axel, and I am. I don't know when I'm gonna get around to it, but boy, am I gonna get around to it one of these days.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to, like, kind of theme it, because I'm going to try to watch Source Code in time for our Spider-Man Far From Home episode. So you have to figure out when you're going to watch Alpha.
Next time we do a werewolf movie.
That might actually be sooner than you think.
All right. Please follow us on Facebook. We are The Outer Frame. I am mostly running that. Donnie is running our Twitter, which is just at The Outer Frame.
Mm-hmm.
Our Instagram, I believe, is the_outer_frame_podcast. Please like and subscribe and leave us comments and tell us things. And if there's a movie that you want us to go see and chit-chat about, then you should tell us in the comments. Because we might go see it.
Mm.
Depending upon what it is. And if we're able to get to it.
Yeah, we don't just watch anything, people. As much as I have said in the past few episodes that I am just a waste container of horrible films, I do still have standards. Thank you.
So, that being said, thank you so much for listening. Hope you have enjoyed the show. Would like to quickly say thank you to Preston for doing our art, our cover art for the show. You can follow him on Instagram and Twitter at Pralix. You can try to find music by Dr. Tub Thumper, who did our intro theme. However, I do not think he has made any more music under that name. And finally, thank you to Caitlin Industries, which is currently being run by me, for editing
the podcast. You're the vice president of Caitlin Industries, so it's fine.
Thank you so much for editing the show. Like I said, please come back next time, listen to more of the show, and tell us what you think. Tell us movies to watch. Watch stuff. I don't know. I'm having as hard as a time coming up with a catchphrase as Shazam.
Oh, that's a good catchphrase, though, Jason. I don't think you think it is, but watch stuff. I think that's good.
Watch stuff.
Yep.
All right. That's a good joke to go out on. Bye.
Bye.